From GEICO Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. You think you live in a pretty safe place, but you just heard about a break-in 4 miles away, which isn't close, but it isn't far either, you know? Art Palpitations is on the scene.
I sure am, Tammy, and I don't even know why I drove out here, because as you know, you got customized renter's insurance through GEICO, so your stuff is covered.
Oh, well, that's great. Any sign of crime there, Art?
Just some light littering, Tammy, but like they say, a little litter can lead to a lot.
Wise words. It feels good to worry less. It feels good to GEICO.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Now, consultant, obstetrician and gynecologist Professor Shane Higgins from the National Maternity Hospital at Holles Street is with us in studio today for Making Babies. Whatever your maternity fertility questions, get those in 087 1400 106. That is the WhatsApp number. You're talking about pain relief, Shane.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, what's available?
Okay, so there's so much that's available, it's going to be difficult to cover it all. But I suppose if we're talking specifically about pain relief in labour, there are lots of different therapies you can employ. And at the National Maternity Hospital, we have a birthing pool, so you can use hydrotherapy, you can deliver in the water. We have something called labour hopscotch now, which the HSE have endorsed, which is a cyclical programme of activity where you do, you know, lunges, you climb stairs, you squat, you use the bouncy ball, again, to help you cope. You've got things like TENS machines. But I would place all of those therapies at the milder end of what's available in terms of the strength of the pain relief. And they're very good for helping you in the early stages of labour. They're very good for helping you when you're at home. So TENS machines, standing under the shower, all of these things are very helpful. But when it comes to the really strong contractions associated with the latter stages of labour and delivery, the thing that most patients go for, and I'll say that because I have the statistics, is an epidural.
Mm.
So of women who laboured in our hospital for the first time in 2025, about 80% of them had an epidural. That doesn't matter whether they entered labour spontaneously or whether they were induced. Mm.
Did they look for it or did they have to have it due to the pain?
No. It's always
was recommended, optional.
It's always something that they would request, but it's something that is freely available. We have a phenomenal anaesthetic service in our hospital. We have consultants, experienced registrars, all available 24/7 to provide patients with epidurals. And that's becoming more the norm now than anything else in labour.
So 80% opting or taking the epidural, the other 20% are maybe looking at some of the other measures or not?
Yeah, or coping without, or obviously if you're using the hydrotherapy pool or if you plan on having a baby in the water, you can't have an epidural. There are some patients who come to the hospital and they're so advanced in labour that they don't get the opportunity to have an epidural. That's rare enough. But even for patients who've laboured and delivered vaginally previously, 50% of multips, as we call patients who've laboured before, now opt for an epidural in labour.
How early in labour, into labour, can you take the epidural?
You can get the epidural as soon as you're diagnosed as being in labour. So that will vary from hospital to hospital, but you must have strong, regular contractions with a cervix that's thinned out and is at least 1 centimetre dilated. So you have to have a diagnosis of labour, but once you have that diagnosis, you can have an epidural. And remember, some patients will only be getting pains for 2 or 3 hours before they're diagnosed in labour, but some patients will be 12, 14, 16, perhaps even 24 hours getting pains before they're diagnosed. And for those patients, it's been a very long 24 hours.
And at what point is it too late to get it?
Look, I think let's break it down into patients who are pregnant for the first time, and you'd almost say it's never too late for that patient to get an epidural, because even if they're coming up to fully dilated or 10 centimetres, it might still be another couple of hours before they deliver that baby. And that's 2 hours of pain relief that they might really, really respond well to, because it allows them to relax. It allows them to regain their strength, rest for a little bit before the pushing. But for a patient who's had a baby before, if you're coming up to fully dilated, it's too late, because you're going to have that baby probably in the next 20 to 30 minutes.
What's actually happening to the body when you get an epidural?
So what you do is there's a little very fine catheter introduced via a needle into the lower back. And that plastic catheter is remains inside you for as long as the epidural is required. And it allows the team, the healthcare providers that are looking after you, and the anaesthetist to begin with, but then the staff in the labour ward and yourself to top it up by administering local anaesthetic to the nerves that are coming out of the spine that serve the lower part of your body. So you should be fairly well anaesthetized or have no pain from the breasts down in labour, and it can be left inside you for many, many hours, topped up continuously, and therefore you get the really beneficial effects of that pain relief for the entire duration for how long the catheter is in place.
Yeah, for as long as it's there. What are the risks associated? Are there any?
There are very little risks. You can get some local bruising, hematoma formation. The needle can very occasionally be advanced too far into the subarachnoid space, so you can end up getting a dural tap. And
what's that?
That's where the cerebrospinal fluid is starting to leak through the perforation in the space, in the barrier that's made by the needle. If that becomes the case and you get a post-epidural headache, then the anaesthetist will come and they'll often give you what's called a blood patch. It's a very rare complication. Well recognised, easily treated. So it's not something that should stop a patient from getting an epidural.
Just on this, texter says, I'm afraid of needles, so I'm curious as to how sore an epidural would be.
Getting it inserted? Look, I'm not going to trivialise, but by comparison with the pain that you're experiencing in labour, it's nothing. So the epidural is there to relieve the discomfort that you're otherwise experiencing. The actual insertion of the epidural, the anaesthetist will put some local anaesthetic into the skin so that you don't feel the needle going through. You might occasionally feel some tingling down the legs, often more associated with the spinal anaesthetic, which is just a similar type. But for the most part, patients have no issues with the epidural being inserted.
Listener wondering, how much gas and air can I have?
As much as you like, because they're always available on tap in all the birthing rooms. So you can use that as much as you like. But I would place that into the milder end of the options.
No, you wouldn't have that and the epidural, I assume.
No, you wouldn't. Sometimes you might find with an epidural, and this is the case with an epidural, that you have what's called a missed segment, where there is a strip of skin somewhere in your tummy, somewhere around your lower abdomen, where you still are aware of a pain sensation. And if you have a missed segment or a block that's more one-sided than the other, you might just top that up with the gas and air, particularly in the latter stages of labour. But for the most part, you wouldn't require gas and air and the epidural.
Listener says, my wife had a really traumatic birth the first time round and is extremely nervous actually about giving birth for the second time. Yeah. First time she had forceps, was an excruciating pain. It was actually very difficult and hard to watch. Yeah. So what advice would you have for us now going forward?
Well, there are lots of different things that you can consider. So, first of all, a very frank and open conversation with your healthcare providers, either your midwife or your obstetrician. If it's the case that your wife would like an epidural before really the labour kicks off, then certainly in certain circumstances, I would say to a patient, we can induce you around your due date and get an epidural very early on in the piece so that you have good analgesic requirements or options available to you and that you won't feel the pain during the course of labour. But bearing in mind, patients who have successfully delivered a baby vaginally before, even as traumatically as your wife did, they often sail through a second labour. It's very quick. The uterus has phenomenal muscle memory, so you labour very effectively, very efficiently, less requirement for an instrumental delivery like a forceps. But if you want to get that, and that's part of the problem because you labour so effectively and efficiently, but if you want the epidural in place, if you want to make sure you have a good epidural before really labour kicks off properly, you could go down the road of induction and just choreograph it so that you get the epidural before the pain start.
Listener says, I want to stay at home for as much of my labour as possible, Shane. How will I know when the pain gets too bad that I do need medical intervention? It's my first baby.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there. First of all, the pains have to be of a sufficient strength for you to merit going into the hospital. And I would say to patients, you need to be able to, you won't be able to speak through that pain. You will be holding onto a piece of furniture to brace yourself. So that's the strength we're talking about. And then depending on how far from the hospital you live, you can, if you're 20 minutes from whichever hospital you're attending, you can wait. If it's your first labour, you can wait till the pains are 4 or 5 minutes apart, lasting about 30 seconds, maybe 30 to 40 seconds before you go into the hospital. That's to maximise the potential of you being in labour when you get there. Because you don't want to go into the hospital and be told, look, you're not in labour, it could be hours yet. You have to then make the decision, do I go home, do I stay in? So, first of all, count the contractions. How frequently are they coming? How strong are they? How long are they lasting? Get down to maybe 5 or 6 minutes, 4 or 5, 6 minutes, and then make your way into the hospital. If you're not in labour, you should be fairly close. If you are in labour, then you can start considering what your pain relief options are.
This texter, just on with regards to a natural birth, I'd like to have one, but everyone says that I'm going to change my mind when it gets closer to the time. Can I insist on no pain medication?
Yeah, absolutely. Nobody is going to force pain medication on you of any shape or sort. So you have to request an epidural before it'll be administered. Nobody in any hospital is going to force that on you. So feel free to put your preferences down on your in a birth plan if you wish to do that. But I would say to patients, and this is advice I give all the time, don't, if this is your first labour, you have no idea what you're letting yourself in for. You might respond very positively and very well to it, or you might find it absolutely awful. So don't go in with any fixed preconceived ideas. Just go in and say, look, let's see how it goes. If I feel I'm coping very well without an epidural, nobody's going to force it on me. I'm probably not going to be too late to request one even later on in labour. But if I go in and feel, look, this isn't for me, I'm not enjoying it, I want an epidural, you can get one as soon as you're a neighbour. And going back to the first statistic, 80% of patients in the National Maternity Hospital last year who laboured for the first time had an epidural.
Hope you had one. Listeners got in touch to ask about ASA, immune infertility and anti-sperm antibodies. Yeah. We've been told we need to get treatment for this. Just what is it, first of all?
So this happens in many diseases, in many organ systems in the body, where you produce antibodies against your own tissue. So this is specific antibodies to damage or destroy or prevent sperm from being produced in the testes. So immune modulation, so where you, and I don't know if that therapy is available in Ireland or whether patients need to go abroad for it, where they suppress the immune system to allow the sperm to be produced properly. But it can occur for many other diseases in the human body as well.
So it can occur in the man or woman?
It can, but it can occur in thyroid disease, it can occur in other endocrine disorders. So an autoantibody is where you create an antibody against tissue in your own body.
So what you get then, it's really an endocrinologist. Is that who you'd fall under there?
Yeah, but you'd start your journey with a fertility team, and then you'd probably be referred to a very specialist clinic for treatment.
Yeah, and what's the success rate of that, or is it just it's?
I think that, you know, there is very good success rate. Are there sufficient studies out there? There aren't sufficient that I've read that say exactly what the success rate is. It's a relatively rare condition. It's an even rarer treatment for it, but I think if you're very keen on using your own sperm for a pregnancy in an IVF setting, then if they're found, then it's something worth treating.
Okay. And finally, can I ask about pain relief for a C-section? I can't have a natural birth, so I'll have to have the C-section. Will I feel a little bit out of it after having my baby because of the pain medication?
No. So again, so not terribly dissimilar to an epidural is something called a spinal anaesthetic. And that's what we use for elective cesarean sections, where again, there's a needle inserted into the lower back in the midline, but it's inserted in and then it's the spinal cord that's bathed in the anaesthetic. So you get a very uniform block from the breast down. But it's a one-off injection. Unlike the epidural where you leave the catheter in and top it up over many hours, this is an in, needle in, inject the anaesthetic, remove the needle, and then you have this lovely block for 2 to 3 hours, which is more than enough time for a cesarean section. And it gives you exactly the same effect, but you're completely conscious and aware of your surroundings. You know when the baby's born, you can feel some sensation, but you'd feel no pain. You don't feel any hot or cold sensation. So you're aware of the birth. You'll see the baby as soon as it's born. You'll spend time with the baby in theatre and recovery. So it's a lovely anaesthetic for a cesarean section.
Okay, listen, if listeners want to listen back to any of our chats conversations about all of the issues and complexities regarding maternity and fertility, you can do so. The podcasts are all available with Shane Higgins. They're on the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live and Making Babies. You can get all of the information. For the moment though, consultant, obstetrician, gynaecologist, Professor Shane Higgins from the National Maternity Hospital. Shane, thanks a million.
Pleasure.
For joining us here on Lunchtime Live.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.